Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen of the media. I welcome you to this interaction. As is usual, we will begin with brief opening remarks by the two ministers. Subsequently, they have agreed to answer a few questions. I now request Sri S. M. Krishna, the External Affairs Minister, to make his opening remarks.
Thank you, Your Excellency, Foreign Ministers, Dr. Ali Akbar Salehi, friends of the media. I have just had an opportunity to interact with His Excellency, Dr. Ali Akbar Salehi, the distinguished Foreign Minister of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Dr. Salehi is on his first official visit to India. However, such are our cultural, linguistic, and civilizational links that it is widely held belief amongst us that no Iranian can be a stranger in India, just as no Indian can be a stranger in Iran. Our monuments, language, cuisine, and literature are all evidence of our a rich shared heritage. As you are aware, Iran is set to assume the chairmanship for the Nalalayan movement in August this year. We deeply appreciate the gestures of President Ahmadinejad for deputing His Excellency Dr. Salehi as a special envoy to deliver the invitation to Honorable Prime Minister of India to attend the 16th NAM Summit. I have congratulated Dr. Salehi on Iran assuming this important responsibility later this year and offered our best wishes for the success of the forthcoming NAM Summit. India and Iran share the same neighborhood. Iran is an important neighbor and crucial trade partner for India and also a major source of our energy supplies. It is also a gateway for India to Central Asia. India and Iran share an interest in the stability of Central Asia and the Gulf. We also face threats from terrorism and extremism. Dr. Salehi and I have therefore taken the opportunity to discuss all these and other issues of common interest. We intend to continue our discussions over lunch. Dr. Salehi has also vast experience on nuclear issues. I convey my appreciation for him for his briefing on the recent discussions between Iran and the P5+1. In Baghdad. India has always held that the nuclear issue should be resolved through peaceful diplomacy and the framework of the International Atomic Energy Agency provides the best forum to address the technical aspects of this issue.
Thank you. In the name of God, Excellency, Mr. Minister, my dear friend, Mr. Krishna, It's indeed a matter of joy, pride, and happiness for me to be in India. I don't feel I'm in a strange country. I feel I'm in my own country. As was rightly put out by His Excellency, the Foreign Minister, and as has been very succinctly and vividly stated by late Nehru, that you can rarely find any two countries in the world that enjoy so much commonalities. India and Iran enjoy a lot of commonalities culturally, linguistically, civilization-wise, and therefore the ground for the enhancement of our relationships in all domains is already there. We intend, and this is the will of the officials of the two countries, to build a strong foundation on this background. I'm happy to be in India, and I'm honored to deliver the message of our President to His Excellency, the Prime Minister of India, inviting him to attend the non-aligned movement which will be held in a few months from now. India being a forerunner and a founder of the non-aligned movement, a movement that probably now has its most important, I would say, presence in offering a platform for most of the developing countries to reflect their views, to demand their rights in the international arena. The Non-Aligned Movement is the united voice of 120 developing countries that can express themselves in a world where we see a lot of injustice, and we need a voice that would speak for justice, for fairness, and for equal sharing in the management of this world. So we discussed with His Excellency a number of issues of mutual interest. We will be continuing discussing the issues of mutual interest. We decided to hold the 17th Joint Economic Commission soon in Tehran. Our trade with India stands now at about $16 billion, but this is not proportionate to the potentials of these two countries. We are hoping and looking into ways and mechanisms of raising this level of trade between India and Iran. There is so much India can offer to Iran, and Iran, I would like to stress here, is a reliable partner of India, is a reliable source of energy for India. India is an emerging economic power, and its energy demands is ever increasing, and they should look for resources that are reliable, and Iran is a reliable source for that matter. Iran will remain a reliable partner for India. We have enjoyed in the past very good relationship. Our relationship now is very good, and we hope that we enhance further these bilateral relationships. Thank you.
The two ministers have agreed to answer a few questions. The first question is from Ms. Devi Rupa, New Indian Express.
Sir, the question is to both the ministers. So the West Asian region has been currently the focus of intense global attention, but Nam's voice has not been heard so far. Do you think the movement has any relevance at all? And do you think you can find a common voice on issues like Syria?
As I said, you see, if you go to the history of the development of NAM, NAM was developed in the early 60s when we had the two sources of power in the world, the West and the East. And there were countries that would have liked to be independent and not to be part of any of these, of the past two powers, the superpowers at the time. So when they got together in Indonesia, they set out 10 principles, and those principles still are valid and still are, I think, of importance. The importance of NAM for especially countries in West Asia, as I said, lies in the fact that it could constitute a proper platform for expressing the joint views of these countries, and it is a platform that also could be utilized if it were only for political purposes that it was introduced, but now it could look into other aspects of interrelationships between the members of NAM, aspects of economic cooperation, aspects of trade cooperation, scientific cooperation, cultural cooperation. So NAM, I think if it is given the proper attention, and India, as I said, being the founder of, one of the founders of NAM, could certainly boost these, I would say, roles of NAM for the betterment and the enhancement of the prosperity of the people living in the countries that are members of the NAM.
Of today's geopolitics. History has shown that Nala Line is an idea and that it evolves over a period of time depending upon various currents and cross currents on a pan global scale. But the idea does not fade. India, one of the chief movers and shakers of the Nala Land movement, right from the beginning of Pandit Jawaharlal Nehru, then Air Marshal Tato and President Sukarno. I think till today we have gone a long way in strengthening the Nala Land moment. The world has changed and the challenges have grown more complex. Yet the systems of global governance, whether in the UN or the international financial institutions, have not kept pace either with the growing interdependence of nations or with contemporary reality. Though we have a global economy of sorts, the global polity does not represent the hopes and fears and aspirations of the majority of the people in the world. the relevance of NAM is of greater value today than ever before.
Next question is Mr. Ranjit from Navbharat Times.
My question is addressed to Mr. Krishna. U.S. has imposed unilateral sanctions on Iran. Is India respecting U.S. sanctions by reducing oil imports from Iran?
Well, as regards the question of sanctions is concerned, let me say that the United Nations Security Council, in its wisdom, has passed resolutions on the issue, and India has always abided by such resolutions of the Security Council as a responsible member of the international community. As far as other sanctions, those decided either unilaterally or regionally, we are aware of such measures. In a globalized world, such actions tend to impact on the market, and our commercial entities take these into account. Such measures should not impact on legitimate trade interests. With respect to our energy, we are dependent on imports to meet the bulk of our requirement. Given our growing demand, it is natural for us to try and diversify our sources of imports of oil and gas to meet the objective of energy security. In this context, Iran is a key country for our energy needs, and it remains an important source of oil for us.
Last question, Ms. Parul Chandra Keshani.
My question is for Dr. Salehi. You know, there was this attack on an Israeli diplomat in New Delhi in February this year, and Israel accused Iran of being behind the attack. I'd like to know your reaction to this, and will Iran cooperate with India in the ongoing probe into the attack?
You see, being a nation with 3,000 years of written history, a nation that has introduced civilization into the world, good governance into the world, a nation that has produced so many poets, a nation that speaks of ethics, and it has based all its life on ethics. We have been accused so many times over so many things. I was joking with a friend. I said even the tsunami in Indonesia, maybe the blame be put on Iran. And it was just a few months ago that was another blame that Iran was intending to assassinate the ambassador of Saudi Arabia in Washington. What happened? You, as I would like to ask the press to go and see what happened to this accusation. So we totally refute any action of this sort. We, at the same time, would like to put on record here, when the Israelis themselves, the Zionist regime, they expressed just a few days ago that they are introducing all these, viruses, the computer viruses, into our industry. And they express it as if it is a matter of crime. And the international community does not react. And when they assassinate our best scientists, our young scientists, they were in the just beginning of their career and having their young children now without fathers, and then they express very loudly that they were the ones who assassinated. It is them that the international community have to ask them, who is the perpetrator, who is the assassinator? They have given assassination a kind of legality when it comes to assassinating the Palestinians. So we totally refute their allegation, and the world conscience knows. We don't need to really bother ourselves. The world conscience knows about the Zionist regime and how they do their business in the world, and it is themselves that have to be answerable to all kinds of atrocities that they have been committed against the Palestinian people.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We come to the end of this event.